Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Thanks so much to Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Couldn't do it without them, Tom. They're here sponsoring the Tom and Curly Show. More importantly, they are making sure that you get to work safely in your car. Until they outlaw the cars in Seattle, they will be there for you. Bucky's Auto Service. What are they going to do when that new Green Deal comes through and we're going to get rid of all cars? What will Bucky's do then, huh? Electric cars?
Yeah, well, I was going to say they're not getting rid of all cars. They're just getting rid of gas.
Gas cars.
Yeah,
gas. Okay, Bucky's going to have to get ready for that, though.
I think they've probably heard of hybrids. I think they've probably heard of electric cars.
They got hybrids. I think they're rid of hybrids. By the way, a guy listens to the show all the time. Carl owns a bar in Tacoma. He's invited us all to go there. He says, as far as the bar stuff's concerned, your money's no good here. I used to do a radio show back in college in Portland. I know how broke all you guys are, so I've got you handled.
I think he offered us all pretzels, which is very nice of him.
But I know how broke all of you guys are, so it's the least I can do. Yes, pretzels as well.
It's nice and generous of him.
Because he did a show back in college, and he knows you don't make much money in radio. Okay. City of Seattle, the mayor was praised. Is this her like state of the city or the city of the state address that she does every year?
Yep. This is her second.
Okay, so let's see. She spoke for 40 minutes. Hey, more freebies.
This summer, we will launch a new program with Seattle Housing Authority and King County Metro to give more than 1,500 low-income residents an unlimited year-round Orca card.
What's that cost? Like $1 million plus or something like that? On top of the others, right? Just more money, right? Okay. By the way, they're going to fund
it. The service they're getting. They're getting
free ride on the bus.
1,500 low-income people on the bus. That saves them a lot of money.
It does. I would like the fact that you have to verify your income. I like that. I looked it up.
Is that right?
Okay. Yeah, that's good. You get an income of about, if you're in a house by yourself, you make 2,000 something bucks a month, which works out to be like $685. This is gross, but you get the money back because you won't pay federal taxes. You're too low. You would get, what's the Orca card worth if you get one that's unlimited for a whole year?
Oh, maybe like, I think you can get it for about $100 if you go in one area. You know, I mean, I don't know if you can go, you know, to how far south it'll go or how far north, but if you're in a general area, it's about $100.
$100. Yeah. And how many rides can you get for that? That's for the whole year?
No, it's a month. No, it's $100 a month.
Holy cow.
About. I mean, you can, if you pay for individual, if you get a month long pass, that's what it could be, about $100. If you do it, pay individually each time, it can go up to $105, $110, or you could, you know, pay for $40. It depends on how many times you ride the bus.
So they're going to get the money for this in order to transfer the wealth from one group to another. It'll come in car tabs and it'll also come in sales tax. Yeah. I don't like the sales tax thing because what I'd like to see them do, talk about a regressive tax. That's the worst. Lower the sales tax. You can't lower the sales tax when you already start to put the sales tax money into free buses. It really ties your hands. I like the idea. Lower sales tax because look at the state
where
of Washington.
Do you get the money then,
well, the state of Washington has taken record revenues, more than 40% or something the last year. So we could afford a slight sales tax reduction, which would be a benefit to everybody, especially those that don't make a whole lot of money. That's
not
all.
If you're paying for affordable housing and all that. I mean, I think the problem is lowering the sales tax. It's right. It's the most regressive, but because we don't have other ways to tax ourselves, except property taxes, which also people don't want to pay. That this is one way to use that regressive sales tax and turn it around to help the lower income people.
Right. That's, well, you're going to get it out of their pocket one way or another, right? Either going to charge them more for soda or you're going to charge them more for just basic goods. You'll take it up in the sales tax. You'll turn around and transform it into an Orca card.
That's right. But as long as people that aren't lower income also pay the sales tax, that helps subsidize that. And that's a good thing.
Let's see. Durkin says she's proud of how we handled the snow.
So we stuck together. We checked on our neighbors. We shoveled our neighbors' sidewalks. Then we went to the local schools and we shoveled them out too.
Okay.
Yeah,
people
general,
complain about the sidewalks.
In general, people are giving the city a relatively positive grade on how they did during the last 2 weeks of snow and
that's what the government is supposed to do. The government is supposed to.
But usually,
sideways.
It gets ripped apart for that.
I think they lucked out because when it came.
Well, it certainly helped, I think.
Yeah, timing was good. Viaduct closure, do you care? Yes or no?
Yeah, that how we handled it?
Okay.
We faced the longest major highway closure in our region that we've ever seen. We asked people to step up, and they responded. They got out of their cars and onto transit, bikes, walking, water taxis. light rail. They worked from home for weeks, and it made a huge difference.
So we had in the last month or so, we had two major developmental issues that we had to respond to as a city. One was the snow, and one was the tunnel.
Yeah.
And you know, we I wouldn't say we passed with flying colors, but we passed, you know, relatively easily, and that's a good thing.
Okay. She says she wants electric charging stations to be mandatory in new buildings. So if you apply for a permit, and put townhomes in or condos or apartments, if you're going to have parking, you're going to have to also include charging stations.
We will continue to develop plans to reduce congestion and make our downtown core a healthier place for all. But we also want to replace carbon and move aggressively to electric cars and buses. This week, I will send legislation to the City Council to require all new buildings in Seattle to provide charging infrastructure for electric vehicles.
Cheer, cheer. I do. I park in those spots.
The electric charging. I didn't realize that you had an electric charge. Car.
I don't.
You scofflaw.
I get in there. Like if I'm driving
Where
the
are
Ford
you, Todd Herman,
the Ford F, the F-100. The F stands for. And I take
follicle.
Yes, and I take the charging thing and I throw it in the trunk of the pickup truck.
And why?
It's my way of basically saying.
Yeah, follicle you.
F you. That's right. I saw some guy that did that at SeaTac, and I thought, that is clever. So I did the same thing. I haven't gotten busted for it, but I like being
You're
able
not
to
clever
it.
On your own. You see somebody
I saw
else.
Somebody else's. There's no cleverness. Such thing as an original thought. You want more of accomplishments?
Today we can celebrate that we took some big steps together. In the last year, towards
I hate how big government gets and how much they congratulate themselves on how big
we don't
they
have to
get.
Play that then. Why don't we play the thing about a tuition free
Sanctuary
community
City?
College?
Huh?
No, the tuition free community college.
I don't even have that. I don't have more freebies. Hold on.
Okay. To help protect our immigrant and refugee neighbors, we told the federal government again that they do not get to turn our local law enforcement into immigration cops.
Okay, now she's patting herself on the back too.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, I mean, for our show. We only gave 3 minutes to a New York Times investigation that took them 4 months.
This is local. Who else you want? I got nothing else. That's all I got from her. She's giving away more free money to college. You're going to be able to go to college for free.
Community college, and she had it because it's the first class of students that managed to go to this, and she had somebody, a student who's in the first year, talking about how great it's been for him.
Did, and I think it's $1,000 for school and some other stuff like that. Do they make you keep a certain grade average in order to continue to have the taxpayers pay for you to be in there?
Yeah, I think so, but I don't have the details.
Wouldn't you like that? Wouldn't you like that? That the person can't just go in there skating around getting C's and D's or D's?
Oh, yeah, I'd hate that.
Wouldn't that be a waste of your money?
Yeah, if they didn't take it seriously, so far that hasn't happened.
Most people that get free stuff don't take it seriously. Seattle household net worth ranks among the top in the nation, but wealth doesn't reach everyone. I wonder why that is. So we need government to redistribute more of it, and that's exactly what you often get called for. That's why we want more people to get free bus rides, more people to get free college, more people to get everything free they possibly can, because apparently wealth does not reach everyone.
Well, yeah. I mean, you are putting a legislative spin on this. Basically, this is just the FYI guy, Gene Balk, and he's doing a little analysis that we're only the 10th wealthiest country in a city in the country. And that's a bit surprising considering how wealthy so many of our young people are. But it turns out that there's a difference between being rich and being wealthy, and wealth is in your accumulation of assets.
Right.
And although our youngsters, our millennials who are making money hand over fist, they're really not wealthy because they're just starting out. They've got a lot of college debt.
Mm-hmm.
So they are, in effect, cash rich in a lot of ways. They're getting paid a lot, but they have not accumulated property. Homes, they say, are your biggest wealth asset and all this. So it's just kind of a different way to look at how we're making money and how we're not.
Does he lament the fact that it doesn't reach everyone?
This lament, there's no lament in, he's just kind of a numbers guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he just, by the way, if you want to want some comparison, the net worth in Brownsville, Texas, in the Rio Grande Valley. This is
how are we doing there? How's Trump going there?
$8,400 is the median net worth.
Oh, boy. Yeah. That's a tough place to live, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I guess so. And our median, just to give you an example, is 400,000. So
is Seattle's 400,000 median?
The median net worth of a household.
Oh, net worth.
Of
net
a household,
worth, okay.
Yeah. And right. So the 10th highest among 100 metro areas. The median net worth for all those areas in the country is 110,000. We're at 400,000, and Brownsville is at 8,000.
Yeah. Let's see. When it comes to, you get dealt a bad hand, right? That's what happens. Nobody picks their parents. You don't know where you're going to end up in this world. You could be born in the streets of Bangladesh, or you could be born in the streets of L.A., to a billionaire, and your life is what your life will be. Oscars 2019. The theory is that it was supposed to be Miss Whoopi Goldberg as the secret host or something like
No, not supposed to be. This is the big rumor going around in Hollywood right now. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a hostless, not in I don't know how many 20, 30 years has there been a hostless Oscars. And then suddenly a rumor circulating. They noticed that about a week ago or so, after they announced that she was going to be one of the presenters, Oscar presenters, she suddenly got sick and was no longer on The View because she's sick. And so they said, maybe. Because she has hosted four times in the past.
Yes.
She said that she thought it was dumb to have a hostless Oscars. And she says, I'm problematic just like Kevin Hart is. So maybe I'm not the person, but I think they ought to have a host. Uh-huh. But maybe they've secretly, you know, kept it out of, I mean, it's too bad.
Don't get me started.
She's going to do this.
Don't get me started.
That somehow they made a blown her cover, but that's the speculation. Others say, no, she really did have a bad cough, they noticed, and one of her co-hosts is pregnant, and so she's probably doing this out of deference. But maybe the jig is up and she's actually going to.
Wouldn't that be exciting?
Well, I mean, it is a surprise.
I hope she gets it, because then we could play cuts from it, because I do a dead-on imitation of Whoopi Goldberg.
In whiteface.
I don't need to do. I don't see color. I just hear voices and I imitate.
Just don't be. Just don't be Ted Danson. That's all I'm asking.
I'm not doing Ted Danson. Is Hollywood irrelevant? According to Barry Diller, Barry Diller is still alive. Barry Diller's been in the entertainment business since the '60s or '70s. The guy owned everything.
Yeah,
at all. He says Hollywood irrelevant.
No, Hollywood is now irrelevant.
Okay.
I mean, it has nothing.
Explain. That's a big statement. Explain.
Let him finish.
Because it, look,
it's like working with you.
It will make.
Oh yeah, that's
oh, yeah,
rich.
Yeah.
I never identified with Barry Diller before, but I am now.
Continue to make programming clearly, and that was one of its functions. But what happened to the entertainment business since the early, 100 years ago?
Oh.
For the first time, they ain't buying anything.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, they're not buying Netflix. They are not buying Amazon.
No, they're not.
And consequently, their relevancy in the world, in other words, it used to be, if you could get your hands on a movie studio, you were sitting at a table with only six other people, five other people.
Right.
And so that table dominated media worldwide. That's over.
So other sources have come along and clipped the wings of Hollywood.
Yes. Primarily, he says, the world is owned by Netflix now, the entertainment industry, and Amazon is making its efforts at trying to move in too. And he says, so the major studios, I don't know how, this is not exactly breaking news, but the major studios used to run the, rule the world when it came to entertainment. And now they're kind of like their second best. They don't have as much money even. And they've all been, bought out by other conglomerates and also. Basically, he just says the wave of the future is these streaming services like Netflix, which, by the way, has a movie up for Best Picture. It's actually the favorite, called Roma.
Mm-hmm.
And, Hollywood's sort of taking a back seat. There is a push among Hollywood types to resist Netflix encroachment mm-hmm. on their territory. And that's why there's some resistance toward voting for Roma for Best Picture for Oscar. And then yesterday, we had Steven Spielberg coming out and saying, I don't think these things, if you can watch them on a TV screen, they're not really movies, and it should only be something that's released in theaters.
And Steven Spielberg, yesterday we played the cut of him saying that movie theaters should be around forever.
That's right, and they will be, but I think there'll be more niche marketing than mainstream.
Is it choosing to sleep in a separate bed? In fact, I saw a piece, I sent it to Jacob a couple of months ago, it's called Bed Divorce. It's the idea that couples are together and everybody's okay in the relationship, but then it comes time to go to bed, she goes into the other room, he sleeps in this room, or vice versa, because they just can't sleep in the same bed.
That's right. And the question is, for what reason? And the article here, it's written by a woman who I think feels defensive. She likes to sleep in separate beds from her boyfriend or girlfriend. I don't know anything about her. But she realizes that if that word ever leaks out, society in general, people just kind of think, what's wrong with you? You know, I mean, what's, and she's trying to come to the defense of being able to sleep separately, how it's a good thing and not a bad thing. And the general consensus is that, especially, they say that's the kind of thing, if you're part of the elder aristocracy in the British royal family, of course, you sleep in separate beds. I think our president and his wife sleep in separate beds. But in general, if you are a young and active, sexually active, vital millennial or, someone who hasn't retired yet, if you're sleeping in separate beds, there's something wrong with the relationship. And she says, no. There are all sorts of reasons. Some people can't sleep very well with somebody else in bed. And maybe it's more exciting if you sleep in separate beds than when you join together. Each time it'll be playtime more. And that's she comes up with all these defensive justifications for her own tendency. She says a lot of people, if people snore, if people just move around, if they have, I know they have, they're advertising these separate mattresses with different, heights and weights and all of that. But basically, she's defensively saying, it's okay. In fact, it might be better and get off my mattress.
This story came up.
Yeah.
And I shared it with Dutchie.
Oh, okay.
And then her friend who overheard the story, because I like to run things by these youngsters.
Uh-huh.
And the friend said to me, oh, you should ask her about what she used to do with her boyfriend.
Uh-huh.
So they would be in bed together. Yeah. And like after 20 minutes or whatever, probably 1 minute.
Yeah.
And then.
Or 4 hours.
Or 1 minute.
Yeah.
And then there would be some, he'd fall asleep.
Yeah.
And then there would be some snoring.
Yeah, I called him up yesterday.
She would then say, she'd poke the guy and go, I'll change his name. Gary, you're snoring. Gary, you're snoring. He'd wake up. She goes, go sleep in the closet. And he would get up.
Sleepwalking like is he?
No. He's aware of the fact that this is happening to him.
Okay.
He wakes up. He takes his pillow and goes in and sleeps in the closet. Can you imagine the humiliation? This went on for like 2 years. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
You'd kick him out. And then he would like some like stray dog go into the closet and sleep in the closet. Wow.
So the idea is sleeping with somebody harder? I mean, most married couples that I know, they really feel like, in fact, when one spouse is gone on a business trip or if they've died or something.
They love it.
You really notice. Some people really notice.
Get the whole bed.
They can't sleep. Yeah, I know. There are two versions of that.
My mom and dad.
I guess.
My dad was an awful snorer.
Yeah.
You hear him from a city block away.
Yeah.
My mom, after a while, was like, I can't stand
it. Yeah. No. Yeah. And I think the snoring issue is the biggest issue. I don't know if younger people, snore that much, but if it is, I think that's understandable. Yes. Mm-hmm. I continue to hear it. But in general.
You can't even sit in the room with it, Tom. You're not even trying to sleep. In general, not only if you take the snoring part of it out, people say you steal the covers or it's too hot,
yes,
or it's too cold, or the bed, the number and everything. So the fact that you're not sleeping in the same bed does not necessarily mean there's anything wrong with the relationship.
No. But it could, I suppose, too.
What you describe it as, you come back for playtime.
Well, that's what they're trying to. I'm trying to put it nicely the way they did in this article.
Oh, that was gross. When you talk about that
plus
stuff.
It's fun to hop into their bed after you wake up. I love my body and I get a lot of pleasure out of my body.
I know. What's wrong with that? Should I retire that?
I think you should retire that.
It's
out of context. You basically said you get no pleasure in your body. And I said I do too. Get to take pleasure in my body, and then you take that clip as if I came up with that, as if it was generated solely on my own. It was a retort.
All right, well, then how about this one?
I own a lot of underwear.
Yeah, that one's funny.
I see what you're doing. Tom, why don't you and I dance before the bump break, huh?
Because I never asked you.
Transition! There goes Rachel Bell.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
It's good to have you here.
It's so good to be wanted to be here.
Well, you bring levity to an already levitated show.
I'm your yeast.
Yes, you are.
I'm the yeast of your problems. Are puns allowed on this show?
We do one a week.
Oh, okay. Well, what's today, Wednesday?
Andrew, mark the time.
10:35.
And that is Rachel's one pun for the week.
Noted.
Got it. All right, here we go. The post-breakup concierge. People are paying $99 a month in order to be able to get help when it comes to separating themselves from that person that they thought could never live without.
I think this is a genius idea, and it's funny because actually I was having a conversation with a friend about something the other day about wondering if a service like this existed. So it was so ironic it ended up on the list today. So this company called Onward, they argue that you hire a wedding planner, you hire a birthing coach, a life coach. So why wouldn't you hire someone to help you after a breakup? When you break up with someone, your head is cloudy, you feel terrible, you have a hard time trying to make decisions and go on with your life. And a lot of people have to move out of the place that they're living because their partner's going to stay in that spot. So what this breakup concierge service does is for $99, you get 10 days of assistance. So they will help you find housing. And the way they describe it is that they're working with brokers to have places kind of set up and co-living places. So it's like an Airbnb. You would just show up to this place that they have for you. Of course, you'd have to pay to live there, but they set it up. They help you with moving, packing, and storage. Then they help match you with a therapist or a counselor if you need it. And then they check in on you and they introduce you to things in the neighborhood that might help, like a yoga studio or bars or restaurants or like women's groups and things like that. So they launched in New York City on Valentine's Day, and their hope is that they're going to be in Seattle by the end of the year.
So they're only like 2 or 3 days old. I mean, they literally just launched on Valentine's Day.
Okay. Yes, by two women in their early 30s who decided to do this after they experienced breakups.
So having never hired a wedding planner, a birth coach, or a life coach, this doesn't have a lot of appeal to me, but you are convinced it's going to work. When we had our pre-show meeting with John, John says, this is the dumbest idea in the world. So I'm fascinated by why you think this would actually work. Why do you think this is a natural thing that happens to everybody, and it's like, it really is hard. I understand the idea that getting through a breakup, is difficult, but why do you think people would feel comfortable hiring somebody to do things that we just do in natural life?
Because people in their 30s, we're in this era where people are used to hiring people to do everything for them. Even down to cooking. We talked about that yesterday. Like, a lot of young people don't cook. You order food. You hire a personal trainer. Like, people are used to hiring people to do stuff for them that they don't want to do, even just hiring movers for a move, There's other things in this arena. I did a story last year. A woman also who had gone through a bad breakup started a breakup retreat, like a camp. And so she does this in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. You go and you pay a ton of money for the weekend, and it's supposed to help you get over your breakup. And there's meditation and therapists and all kinds of things like that. I think a lot of people really want something to be over, like a breakup, and they can't get over it themselves. It just keeps going around in their brain, and you get to the point where you're like, I don't care how much money I have to spend. If somebody says they can help me get rid of this, I'm going to pay it. So I think that this is like, people are busy working. Why not have someone else find me a place, pack up my stuff? $99 is actually pretty cheap for all that, in my opinion. I don't know why you wouldn't know how to find a yoga studio or whatever.
But
I think it's the same as when somebody passes away, then in that week or those days following, suddenly you have to plan a funeral when you're in the worst grief of your life. And a breakup can have terrible grief, and then you're trying to do the same stuff. You're trying to move out and get on with your life while you're in this cloud of grief.
I would say that because I think things are different for the generation that is more socially connected through the internet, in that you're constantly being reminded of that other person.
Yes.
Every once in a while, you look down your phone and Facebook sends you 6 pictures of stuff from like the year before. You're like, oh my God, that's when we went to Grand Canyon. Or it's always around you, either through text messages or something else. It's not like a series of letters that were mailed to you that you keep in a box under the bed that you can easily burn.
Yeah.
The idea is that you're always having that person show up in your life in unexpected ways that you didn't want, because it only reminds you of the good times.
And do you think that, I mean, you mentioned like women's groups. Do you think more women would do this than men, say?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So this is geared toward that.
You know men, they don't even want to go to the doctor. You know, they're from Mars.
More guys do to get over a breakup?
Drink.
And then what?
You know what? I can't say that expression. What is it like to get over someone? You have to get under someone.
There you go. But so this is no different. This is no different than a self-help book, except that it's in like an interactive self-help book. You actually get people to do that. You know, most in the old days, you'd buy a book and it says how to get over a breakup or something, and they tell you go do these 3 things. Now you have somebody doing those 3 things for you.
Or you can go online to YouTube. What do I do after a breakup?
Number 3. Try new things. You always wanted to take guitar lessons, take a yoga class, finally read that book you bought 3 years ago. Well, Now you have the time.
Uh-huh. And that's only number three.
Story? Several years ago, maybe 4 years ago now, I had a breakup and I couldn't get over it for several months. So I went on a trip to Canada to visit a good friend of mine to be with her so I could feel better. Mm-hmm. On this trip, I get a text when we're walking down the street from a friend that says, "Are you okay?" And I message back, "Why? What happened?" Other texts come in. All of a sudden, I get a link. My ex-boyfriend had written an article that got published in the Washington Post entitled, "I Thought We Were Going to Get Married. This Is What I Did to Cope." And it was this whole article about us breaking up, about me breaking up with him in the Washington Post and what he had
famous.
To do to feel better.
Did it have your name?
It didn't have my name, but it had his name. And that was kind of crazy. But yeah, he talked about drinking, going to the movies, kind of like what that guy said. Actually, all the tips were quite generic.
Find a new hobby.
And I was like,
"Find a class you've been wanting to take. You'll get out more, meet new people, and most importantly, get that pesky ex off your mind."
You know what helps with that? Golfing. Racquetball. Rat ownership. Learning the Lindy Hop.
I love this idea. Did you feel used
Tom,
by that
I
Washington
am so done on this?
I know, but I'm not. The thing about the Washington, do you feel like you were used in that thing, or do you kind of feel like, wow, I'm worthy of journalistic effort in the Washington Post?
I kind of thought that he definitely used this situation to make some money and to get an article published in a national publication. I wasn't upset about it, but
you
I just
weren't.
Thought,
okay.
How strange. I just felt like I was Bridget Jones or something. I felt like I was in a rom-com. Like, who does that happen to?
Do you normally break up? Are you the one that's doing the breaking, or are you the one that's getting broken up?
I have always 100% been the breaker-upper.
Right.
And I think that means something's wrong with me a little.
70% of marriages that end in divorce, the trigger is pulled by the woman. That in most cases, the guy will just hang on and just keep going and won't want to finish it.
Yeah.
And the same thing in relationships. The guy sort of settles into a thing and thinks, you know what? This is what I can expect. She's insane, but whatever. And you just keep going and keep going. Then finally, the woman realizes this guy's a loser and dumps the guy.
Yeah.
So most of the time, women do the dumping.
But here's the thing. Do men set up the women to get dumped because they want to and they don't have the balls to do it?
Oh, man, I tried to get myself dumped so many times so I didn't have to do it. And then they just don't do it.
I
see. We're slugs. I hate breaking up with people. I guess is it worse to get broken up with, though?
Having been broken up with numerous. Here's one of my favorite ones. Girl breaks up with me. She says, "I'm breaking up with you." I said, "Why?" She goes, "Because you're gay. You sing in the car." I'm like,
"You sing in the car?"
When I'm driving in the car and she's in the car with me, I like to sing. And so I sing in the car. So apparently that makes me gay. So she broke up with me because I sing in the car.
It's such a shame that didn't work out.
Yeah, it sounds like she's a quality and very smart individual.
John's favorites.
Patricia.
I thought we were done with this segment.
Yeah, the tables have turned.
I just remember where I was. I just finished singing like a Bruce Springsteen song. The song ended. She looked over at me.
Yeah.
She's like,
"Springsteen, so gay."
Patricia's a gay name. She could be Pat, like on SNL. Okay. Who knows what she is.
Okay, all right. We don't speak of gay as a derogatory thing.
I think
look at Andrew's in there. He said, bye-bye.
I'm the least homophobic person at this station. Besides Tom.
Online Trade Academy text line 98973. Get on here with your letters, your questions, your comments, your concerns, your funny little observations are always welcome. And the Tom McCurley Show. Let's think we'd take care of two quick stories about DNA, Tom. The story about the guy who, did he wipe his mouth and then throw the napkin into the garbage?
Eating a hot dog at a hockey game in Minnesota, wiped his mouth with the napkin, put it in the container with the hot dog, and then threw the hot dog away. It was immediately retrieved by, I don't know if it's FBI or federal authorities anyway, mm-hmm. and local authorities. They retrieved it, and son of a gun, if it didn't match the DNA of a murder that happened in 1993.
Aha.
This guy is a married man with three children, but 25, however many years ago, they think that he's now been charged with a murder of this 35-year-old woman, and he was caught with that.
So they found his DNA, obviously, at the murder scene, but did not know who that DNA belonged to.
Exactly.
So they were able to track it back. It just happened. They must have been suspicious of him and to watch him eat the hot dog.
And this is the key. The reason they were suspicious is It's another one of those, and they don't identify which one of these DNA founding companies are, but you know, something like 23andMe, where you send in your money and they say, oh, and here's your ancestry. Well, enough people have done that. They say something like 60% of white Americans have now family members that have volunteered their own DNA samples so that they can track down a lot of people. And they did this study. They had some DNA material, and they put it through the system and said, oh, we've got a couple of matches. Mm-hmm. Let's check out these two matches. I was thinking it'd be interesting to talk to the guy who matched and wasn't. It wasn't him.
Yeah.
But this guy was on their radar. So they checked his biography. They found out where he lived at the time, said, wow, this works, this works, this works. They put him under surveillance. They got the DNA, and bingo, it matched.
Well, coming up today, actually, in Arizona, under Senate Bill 1475, introducing that DNA must be collected from anyone who has to be fingerprinted for a job in the state there in Arizona, if you want to volunteer in certain positions, and a myriad of other reasons as well, that the state of Arizona will take your DNA and keep it on file.
Okay, now wait a minute. If you have to be fingerprinted for a job, like I've never had a job where I had to be fingerprinted. Are there just certain kinds of jobs where you have to fingerprint, or is that standard industry-wide procedure? Have you ever had to get your fingerprints done for a job?
Not for a job. I think the state does, right? So the state takes the fingerprints in Arizona.
Oh, if you work for the state,
yes,
you have to have your fingerprints? Really?
Yes, the DNA must be collected from anyone who has to be fingerprinted by the state for a job, to volunteer in certain positions, or a myriad of other reasons. The bill would also authorize medical examiners in each county to take DNA from any body that comes into their possession. So the Department of Public Safety would maintain the collection of data alongside the person's name, their Social Security number, their date of birth, and last known address. So the state would collect your DNA, and it would keep it safe, and they would know who you are in case something were to happen.
So that would be like, we're talking about state employees then. That's what we're talking about.
What starts with state employees.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Now, I guess I don't have a problem with that. I mean, to me, it's not that much different. We have ID cards and everything else to establish.
So if you work for the state, you give up your right for the, they have to have your DNA on file.
Is that a right? It's just like they have to take, if I want to have a driver's license or any kind of ID, they take my picture and they establish when you were born. You have to bring your birth certificate and all this kind of stuff to prove to get a passport. Is that any different than having your DNA?
I think you would eventually find the person to be pretty uncomfortable with the fact that if you went to go to get a license at the Department of Motor Vehicles and they take a swab from you, or you lick something, and then the government and the state has your DNA on file.
Yeah, but I would guess a lot of insurance companies could also demand that, too.
Well, the difference is in the private sector, the government, all the laws are to what the government can't do to us, right? The Constitution, which you can't do to us.
Yeah.
This is apparently what they can do to us. They can collect our DNA. Well, by the way, it starts with just state employees, and then eventually it's everybody.
Well, that's not what the bill is, though. And you would object to that.
Yes.
But you don't mind your eyeball being scanned. That's personal.
That's private.